Okay, and welcome back. We have a special guest tonight. For 2 hours, we're going to talk about the current state of affairs in Las Vegas and update you on many fronts, some analysis as well. I just got a note from Yoshi. He sent me an article here. This is interesting. Dr. David Spiegel, a Stanford University psychiatrist, says about Paddock, there's nothing sick about him. In other words, he's not insane. They're not going to find anything. It's Paddock's feeling. Spiegel said of Paddock, as a psychiatrist, I deeply resent the inference that anybody who does something like this is mentally ill. It's untrue and deeply unfair to people with mental illness. Oh, interesting. Remember, they've sent his brain off somewhere to look for some kind of microscopic evidence that he was insane. Well, this psychiatrist says that is not the issue. They found nothing physiologically wrong with the brain, apparently, at initial autopsy. Okay, we're going to go this hour and next hour to Las Vegas to talk to Gary Holland. I've known Gary for a long time, actually, directly and indirectly. He's in the media in Las Vegas. I used to be there working there, and my program was on the air for many years in Las Vegas, and we had a wonderful, wonderful, intelligent audience there. Still do. Gary, are you there?
Yes, sir. How's it going this evening, Jeff?
It's good. Thank you. One thing I learned when I was in town there working, and you've been there, what, how many years?
I've been living here going on 20 years. I've been on coming on and off since 1992, so it's been quite a long time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. In Las Vegas, business is God. It's everything. And what happened on October 1st, it has been terrible for business, all right? And if there had been a follow-up or if there is another one, Las Vegas will be buckled at the knees. It's that bad. Las Vegas is doing everything humanly possible to make this recede into the mass consciousness of America as quickly as that can happen. What is the state of the town right now? What is the media doing with this story at this point?
Well, I'll give you a little background first. Before this happened, the Las Vegas economy never recovered since this depression started.
Right.
You do have a lot of tourists, but I'll give you an example. Now, when I used to go in the casinos years ago, most of the people would be playing, you know, this is a little inside baseball, but anyone who knows about playing on, especially machines make up at least about 90% of all profits for the casinos. I mean, yeah, you have sports book, yeah, it makes a little bit. You know, the tables make a little bit. But you're big. I mean, that's why you go in there. You don't see a ton of tables or like five sports books. You see nothing but machines. Machines make up a big profit. And now, yeah, they've been claiming for a few years, well, you know, we're moving away from them. We're going to nightclubs, blah, blah, blah. We're, you know, our venues, our shows, that's what's helping us make money out. That's not true. This town was not built on shows and buffets and, you know, and nightclubs. That stuff is comps, really. It's really what they're set up for. That's a side.
That's right.
Or something to comp somebody with, like a room even. For years, you go in there and you couldn't find a seat. People would be max betting morning, noon, and night. I knew a cocktail waitress years ago that worked over at the old, which is now I think it's called the D, used to be Fitzgerald's. And that lady was bringing $200 to $300 a night. When the depression happened, she was lucky to be bringing in $40 a night. So, you know, on tips. The machine play, and you go in the casino now, if first of all, a lot of them, especially the local, so you get two types of casinos here.
Uh-huh.
You got the strip casinos, which are tourist traps.
Right.
And yeah, a little bit even downtown, semi-tourist trappy down there. But a lot of casinos here in town, people don't understand, most of the casinos, and you're like local bars, and you know, Jeff, you lived here, so you know what I'm talking about. You have the video poker bars, you got like the smaller casinos, and even some bigger casinos that just cater to locals. And I mostly, you know, I go in sometimes, and it's mostly to locals casinos.
Sure.
I don't like going down the strip because just with all the touristy stuff. And it's just really gimmicky down there. But what I've noticed over, I'd say, since late 2007, going into the beginning of 08, the people playing on these machines now, you're lucky if they're playing 30 cents a hand.
30 cents. You know, it's all about disposable income. It's gone. Sure. There just isn't that much.
You gotta understand that. Yeah, because you most of the time used to be max bets was anywhere between $3 and $5. So
you're
talking to most people. Most people playing 30 cents a hand, 10 cents a hand, and all most of them people are doing are milking. You know, and them days are going to over with too. Is where they would be sitting in the machine trying to milk drinks. You know, from the cocktail waitress. You know, blah blah blah. So add that now with this shooting, and you know over the past few years, they've been bringing in a lot of these type of gimmicky concerts, you know. They have them, like, for all different genres of music. It isn't just country music. Usually this time of the year, October, November, is because the rodeo comes into town, the PBR, and they have, like, the big rodeo that comes in every year, the World Series, you know, all that type of stuff. So that's why they would have a country music concert in October. So people are just trying to figure out why would they have all of a sudden have the country music festival in October. Well, this is getting to be time of the year where people come into town for the rodeo and that type of stuff. And you're going to see a lot of country concerts, you know, at the local casinos due to the rodeo.
Sure.
So what's been going on is they've been putting a lot of these different type of concerts. Why? Because they need to draw. They're trying to draw people to the strip at least. The problem they're having is that the people, the younger ones that come into town now, don't have the disposable income. And, you know, they try to excuse it off as, well, millennials and younger, they're not interested in gambling the way, you know, older generations were. Well, that's bull. That's bull. That's bull. It's just they don't have the money to play. Mm-hmm. So, like, even down at the strip properties, people come in now, instead of max betting, used to be like down the strip, man, you're talking $5, sometimes $10 max bet machines. You'll be lucky if you go down there if you see someone paying $2.
Wow.
So, the same amount of people coming into town. You just don't have enough people playing the amount they want them to play.
The gross profits must be down at least 50%.
Caesars has been in bankruptcy, constantly in bankruptcy now, for going on about 6-7 years. Mm-hmm. You know, MGM just had another restructure on their bankruptcy. What they're doing is basically, I'll put it in a simple term. A lot of people know what payday loans are. And, well, especially in this town, you should really know what a payday loan is. So what they're doing is, like, it's like a payday loan. See, they're borrowing from this guy to pay the debt to this guy. And what they constantly keep doing is they're just constantly floating debt, constantly reissuing bonds, corporate bonds, constantly restructuring their loans. Because, like you always, like the old saying goes, you know, if I owe you $100, it's my problem. If I owe you $1 million, it's your problem. And these banks are in deep kimchi because these banks, you got to understand, a lot of these banks are so over leveraged with these loans they've given these casinos over here. So what happened was during the boom years, these casinos were bringing ridiculous profits in. But the thing was, they were turning around with these profits and building these huge, you know, big Disneyland-type casinos.
Right.
And that was great while everything was going good. Now things are going bad. Things have gotten worse. And then this is only going to make it a lot worse than it already is.
Are they expecting the Raiders to turn anything around? Are they banking on the Raiders for a significant recovery?
I don't know. I've heard a couple. See, they just started the NHL team, the Golden Knights, here this year. I think the third home game. Apparently, one of the home games, a couple of the home games were sold out. The last home game, I would say that it was sold out, but it was like they had to discount some of the tickets. And this is, we're only talking the third, and an inaugural season of an NHL team. And this was against the Boston Bruins, which is, you know, a very old NHL team. So it wasn't like another expansion team from a few who hasn't really have a rich history. Boston Bruins has a really rich history in the NHL.
Sure, of course.
And they were selling, they had to discount the seats. They're planning on building a $1.6 billion dome stadium for the Raiders. And if you remember, I emailed you the other day. I showed you where they were going to build this thing, which is, I still don't get it, why they're building where they're building it. But
now,
they're trying
to force people into the Strip. That's what they're doing.
Everything's about that, because that was the only way the casinos would have agreed. See, Here's one thing you got to learn about Nevada. The state of Nevada, it has two things that run the state of Nevada. A, the federal government, because they own 90% of the state of Nevada.
Yeah.
And two, casinos. The state legislator, the state representatives, your house, which would be your house and state, your state house and your state senate.
They got assemblymen and senators, right?
The assembly and your senators up in Carson City. They basically, they're just really yes men for the casino industry. I mean, they don't make any moves unless they get any type of an approval from the casino industry.
Right.
I mean, because if you go against you buck the casino industry, just ask Sharon Engel what happened when she was running against Harry Reid about bucking the casino industry.
Right.
Because in all actuality, she had that election stolen from her. And the reason why it was stolen from her is because of all the culinary union. You have your culinary union here, the SEIU, the security union, the dealers union. You have a bunch of unions because the union runs this town. And, she found out exactly what happens when you go against the casino machine.
Mm-hmm.
The casino machine pretty much has a lock on any politician in this state.
Absolutely. It's the end of story. Well, let's not even push it. It's just a done deal. It's the industry runs the state, period. Okay. Except for the feds when they.
And so you were asking about the media.
Yeah. What is the media doing right now? 2 weeks on and we're into this.
I'll give you an example.
Yeah. Right.
I'll give you a good example. I just heard this today on another talk show, local talk show here. Your old station, Channel 13, was basically their whole newscast now is trying to debunk what they so-called conspiracy theories, selling the MGM line, selling Sheriff Lombardo line, selling FBI line.
Uh-huh.
So at the end of the newscast, it says Channel 13 Action News is proudly sponsored by MGM Resorts International.
Well,
you couldn't make it more obvious than that.
No. Yeah, I was there for almost 3 years, and it was wild. I remember one time, Sinatra came into the building. He was doing a taping there, and then there was a guy, and talk about the mafioso types. The guy's name was Lefty Rosenthal, very famous name in mob history. He actually had his own TV program, TV show, and he'd come in, and they'd do it once a week, and it was funny. He had the big guys around him and the black car, and it was crazy.
Tony Sperano and gang.
Yeah,
but see, if people want to understand what that whole scene, what you were just talking about, the movie Casino was based exactly on Lefty Rosenthal and Tony Sperano and the late 70s, early 80s mob that was in your face, that was the last, what they called the last of the mob in Las Vegas, which we all know ain't true, because what happened was the mob just basically became an asset of the federal government and went underground and still are running through the scenes of the casino. Come on.
That's very well said. Very well. All right. Now, so this is interesting. So we'll assume the other stations, 8 and 3 or whatever it is.
3 and 8 and 5 and Channel 5. They're all the same. Look,
it's all damage control now.
Just that 13 I just happened to hear.
We might as well call them.
All the channels are the same.
They're all pushing the lone gunman. That's what they're doing. They want this to go away. It's not going away easily, though. The news conference with Lombardo and Rouse, the FBI guy in charge, the other day, was 3 days ago or whenever it was, Friday. You saw it, I'm sure. Lombardo looked like a man who was walking on eggshells and under maximum stress. He was shaky. He was using wrong words. He looked like he was really sweating it. They got something on that guy, and he's real. He's, boy, talk about tense.
Sure, you got to understand. See, Metropolitan Police Department in Las Vegas, which is the Metro Sheriff's Department, is basically Yeah, subsidiary of a federal agency, because they get most of their funding from federal agency. They committedly, whenever they have these New Year's Eve celebrations here, they say we work hand in hand with the federal government. Our federal agents are always in Metro headquarters.
Yeah.
We're always working hand in hand, and so you know he sounds to me. Well, first of all, the guy. He's in over his head, because I think what's going on with him is that he's basically, his hands are tied 10 ways but Sunday.
That's what it looks like.
He doesn't get out of line.
Oh, no. He's walking the straight and narrow, boy, and sweating it. Oh, yeah. He don't want to say one wrong word.
And his re-election's coming up soon, too.
Well, we'll see.
And his re-election's coming up soon, too. So.
He may not. He may not. Don't be surprised if he doesn't run. He may want out.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the media is basically in doing what they're supposed to do. Lone gunman. He's dead. We got to button it up. It's a tragedy about the loss of life. The hotels are doubling down on their security. They're examining every aspect you can. And Las Vegas has never been safer, and great things are coming. And I talked to people that are already getting letters in the mail and like gift cards from the hotels that they've been at, saying, come on back. Everything's wonderful, blah, blah, blah. So understandable. This is what I would do, too, if I was in their position. So that's what I thought. Okay, I just wanted to get a sense of the feel. Unfortunately, for that agenda, it's not going to work that well. There are let me restate this. Every single survivor of that catastrophe, every one that I've read or seen or heard, has said multiple shooters. Every one of them. And there was a picture of the Mandalay Bay, I guess 2 days later. You probably saw it. I can't find the damn thing now. But it was a daytime picture. And I would say, 4 windows, maybe 5, down low, fourth, fifth, sixth floor area, were not the gold windows. They were black. They were temporary. They put them in for some reason. They couldn't get the gold ones. I'm sure it's all gold now. But those windows were in 4, let's just call it 4, 4 different rooms. And as we know now, those windows can be taken out in less than 60 seconds if you know what you're doing. So you say, people, well, why didn't the other's windows get broken out for the shooters? They didn't have to. If they knew what they were doing, they could simply take the glass out. No tinkle, crank, glass falling, none of that. They didn't have to. So I don't know where those black windows came from, but they were clearly in the area where most everyone was saying that's where they thought the shooters were located. Fourth, fifth floor.
Sure. And that's where, when I called you the other night and made that thing, where actually, my opinion is the primary shooting team. You'd be your rear flank, or protecting the rear, which
right.
would be your ground shooters, would be your forward, or your rear would be coming from the second, third, fourth, or even fifth floor, sixth floor, even, which it doesn't matter, you know, in the first six or seven floors.
Right.
You'd have that because you want to cover the ground squad that would encounter return fire or counterattack. It's an ambush. Did you get to look at it as a military?
Let me mention that Gary is a former United States Marine. Two tough tours abroad, one in Africa, one in the Middle East, and he knows what he's talking about. So we can just kind of back up a little further. This was a classic military operation, correct?
Oh, definitely. The planning, the strategizing, the placement. I would say running at least 2 to 3 teams, which you have a primary team, and your second and third teams don't necessarily have to be even highly skilled,
right.
Professionals. I mean, they could be like marginal people, assets that they use that would just basically all they would be there for is for mainly is misdirection, firing, you know, to get the herd back to where the professionals are, because
right.
you got to understand that's what I've been saying. I think what my opinion is that it was 3 to 6 shooters on the ground, consisting of two to three sweep teams.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that, you got one sweep team coming in. Now, it was interesting because I've been saying solid west to east, but Rick, your witness that call that was that you had an right. interview with on Friday mm-hmm. said it sounded like to him that they were coming mainly kind of like from the southwest, and then I re-examined some pictures of that southwest corner, mm-hmm. and you have plenty of cover for uh-huh. For the team, you know, for especially the first coming in on the southwest side, more like a west-southwest. And definitely I can say for sure, as you know, it's my opinion, but I definitely know another sweep team came in from the northwest working its way to the southeast. Now, I know you put the picture up there. That would be the stage. Okay?
Yeah, let me ask people, hold on. Go to guests and look right under Gary Holland's name. It says Gary Holland in Las Vegas. Update and analysis. First selection, aerial photo maps of Las Vegas massacre site and hotels. Please click on that right now, and let's load that up. And what we're going to do is just familiarize you with some of the key locations, and what Gary is describing will make more sense. We'll get this picture up and take a look. There are two pictures, actually. The one Gary sent me, it's labeled, and below that is a second picture that is a little smaller and not labeled, just so we have two things to look at. We'll take a look at the top picture, which is labeled. So let that load, and we got a break coming up. Let's do this break. We'll come right back with Gary Holland and take a look at this top picture in just a couple minutes, so hang on. Okay, welcome back. Go to Gary Holland in Guests and go right below his name. Aerial photo maps of Las Vegas massacre site and hotels. We have two pictures up there for you. I'm going to be enlarging the second one in a little bit. The first one is well labeled, so we're going to look at that one, Gary, so go ahead and pull that up. By the way, to this point in time, I have counted nine hotels altogether where there were credible and at least interesting reports of alleged live shooters. Nine hotels. Let's see. Paris, Gillies, Caesars, Bellagio, Aria, Hooters, Tropicana, New York, and, of course, Mandalay Bay. And there may be more. We think that this potentially was a I'm going to play psychologist for fun here. If the message was to have a blood sacrifice and yet let the rest of the town know that it was just as vulnerable as the concert venue, they might have acted as we have apparently seen. Other shooters at other hotels, not a lot of casualties that we know about, that we can't find any, but there were definitely reports of gunshots and shootings. Now, that might have just been a threat to the city at large, from ISIS, and by extension, the CIA and the Mossad. I don't know how to read it from a tactical perspective, but it's clear that there were other activities going on that night. Very quickly, Gary, what do you think? Why weren't other people killed? If they weren't, then they may have been. We don't know. They can cover almost anything up in Las Vegas. What do you think all these other shooting venues were about?
Well, let to explain what I was talking about, the two to three teams, and you have two other teams that are secondary teams. And the primary goal you have to, was that concert venue, because A, you have a large crowd of people.
Oh yeah.
Easy shooting.
20,000. Yeah. Yeah.
And for the primary shoot team, which was the professionals, an easy escape. See, if they were running around, like, if you had, like, the secondary group, your secondary teams or squads, if they get caught, no problem. Because, you know, they'll be arrested.
They're expendable. Yeah.
They're expendable. They'll disappear off the map. And them type of people would have been in these different casinos. Say they shoot off a little bit, they should make noise. And what you do, see, not only, because understand, if it was all concentrated just at the concert venue,
right,
all the Metro Police, State Police, Henderson Police, because they called in Henderson.
They blanketed
North Las Vegas
SWAT. They
called every surrounding SWAT from every police force in here in the valley. But what you do is, okay, now put it this way. You have these ground teams shooting in the crowd. They're in the crowd mixed in. People running every which way but Sunday, but mainly in the right direction where they want them to go, which is that left side of the stage.
Uh-huh.
Because I've heard like three or four, including the kid, I call him a kid because the younger guy that you've had on your site that his, you know, gave his briefing. That guy, Rick, gave his briefing, and there was a couple others I've read, the same story.
Uh-huh.
That lady I told you about that night, that was on Michael Savage, who said all the same thing, that people were trying to get out, but they were all heading to the east side of the lot, of the venue, and it was mainly on the left side of the stage where people were trying to all bunch and crowd into. And that's really where they wanted them to go, because that's really where they were going to do. So if you're going to have just that one venue where all the shooting happening, well, all the assets are going to run to that venue. But if you have a secondary and a third team making noise at Tropicana, MGM, New York, Excalibur, say even as far down as Gillies, because Gillies is is inside Treasure Island, which is a Spring Mountain,
uh-huh,
and Las Vegas Boulevard, which is, I'd say, would be about a mile away from there,
right,
maybe a mile and a half away from there. You would have other assets, instead of having all forces and assets of different police departments going in that one venue. Well, they're scattered around. They're running around with their heads, chickens with their heads cut off. Because you have to respond to shootings at Excalibur, Bellagio, all these different casinos on the strip. So then you're thinning out, you know, a concentrated asset. You know, you're basically thinning out the force,
right,
which is what you want. Because then you're not.
That's another military tactic, of course. Let's just call them secondary teams. Maybe a couple, three in there. They're driving around and they're shooting up this place or that place just to create a need to have law enforcement diverted yet again. So they go, they're pulled from place to place to place. Okay. So those shootings in your mind absolutely happened, right? Are you convinced?
I'm convinced. And mm-hmm, like I said, and I think I've told you that it was even, they might even had some people in a squad behind this, which is Giles Street. If you look at the map, there's Las Vegas Boulevard, which is to the west side of the venue. But on the back side of the venue, there's a street called Giles Street, which is G-I-L-E-S Street. And a little teeny street that dead ends into a dirt lot, which is West Alibaba. Okay?
All right, we got to find that. Hold on.
Drive.
I got to find that.
I don't think them streets are labeled, but if you look on would be the east side of the venue, you'll see a small street. Okay? And then a little, which would the small street would be running, I'd say, from your north to south. And then a one little teeny street right off from that runs west to east. And then you have, which would be Mandalay Drive, okay, which would be farther, a little bit farther over. And that would run towards west to east.
Okay, looking at the map, looking straight down the map. Las Vegas Boulevard, the strip, is dead ahead. It runs, that's north-south.
Yep.
Okay.
And if you see where I marked in yellow, it says Route 91 Concert Venue. Okay, it's kind of like in a circle.
Right.
Like the side closest to Tropicana, that's Reno Avenue. The mm-hmm, other side of the venue, which would be on the south side of the venue, that's Mandalay Drive.
The bottom of the picture, okay, as you look at it, yeah.
And then there's a little road, which would be on the east side, the east side of the venue. That's a street called Giles Street. It's not Reno Avenue. Reno, you know, a lot of streets here in town, the street goes from one name and it switches automatically into another name.
So Giles runs to the east.
Well, yeah, the east side of the venue.
Of the venue.
It runs north to south. Yes.
Got
exactly.
It. It's paralleling
and
Las Vegas Boulevard.
By the way.
Is
yeah.
What?
Yeah, there's walls on that side. See, there's like bushes.
I see the greenery.
Like a little wall. Yeah, the greenery and stuff like that. Now, that little building right there, too, where they could have run into in that area, that's a Roman Catholic church, which is basically on the corner of Reno Avenue and Giles Street. Now, that little street I'm telling you about, there's an empty lot right there.
Hard to believe there's a Roman Catholic church right there. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that little street that would run west to east, and it dead ends, looks like to like a cul-de-sac looking thing. Now, that's called Alibaba Street.
I see. That's yeah. Right in the center of the block where the venue is located. Yeah. If you look at the word Route 91, it would be right where the 9 is, and roll your eyes to the right, and you'll see that little short street. It's just a little gray street with a cul-de-sac on the bottom. It's Alibaba. Okay. Are the C-O-N-C-E-R-T, where the C is, and concert. Yeah. Look to the right, and you'll see that little street. Giles is a street that runs up and down as you look at the picture, paralleling Las Vegas Boulevard.
Sure.
Alibaba goes west to east. All right. Very good. Now,
and realize they're both parking lots right there, because they use the dirt lot as a parking lot for the venue. And I'm sure the Catholic Church allowed parking for the venue also.
Sure.
They usually work out these agreements. Now, if you had a secondary or third team trying to get people to get back up and go a certain direction, you got to understand that's a parking lot full of cars. It's pitch dark.
Yeah.
There's hardly any security. And like I said, some of that security watching might have been, you know, watching that, because they always have security, you know, looking through the parking lots and making sure no one's breaking in. Some of that security might have been assets for all, you know. I don't know. I'm not going to say yes or no on
that. Look, Gary, anything's possible in this.
Sure.
Anything. We can't rule anything out. And that's how crazy it is now.
And I also even have, and if you look at the picture also at the end of that dirt lot, I have a theory where they were saying, oh, well, you know, to cover themselves, they said, well, you know, Steve Paddock was trying to blow up some fuel tanks. Well, here's my point. Yes, there probably was rounds in that tank, because if you see them two white tanks at the, which would be east side, the southeast corner of that dirt lot right there. Now, if you're the shoot team shooting into a crowd, you're going to have stray bullets. And that stray bullets, I guarantee you, would have been able to halfway penetrate into them tanks. Them tanks are very thick. But them rounds would have been a stray round.
All right,
or
now
two,
let me peg this for everybody. Hold on.
Yep.
What I want you to do is look at the concert venue, just that whole rectangle, all right? At the very bottom of it is a green roof. That's the stage. And they had, I guess, bleachers left and right of that. And then a big, flat, open area where most of the people were dancing and having fun. Now, directly to the right, as you look down at that picture, the green roof stage, directly to the right are two round tanks. You'll see them about an inch away, inch and a quarter, inch and a half away. Those two tanks are jet fuel tanks, right? That's what we're talking about. Go ahead. And that big dirt lot, that's parking. And then Alibaba Street, midway up, or Alibaba Avenue, whatever the hell it is, that's your boundary. That's where the cars come off and go into the parking.
Sure. And they would have came out there, and they might have even came on to Mandalay Drive, and then depending on, it was a three-day event, wherever the police were, maybe they're as exit, they would go one way,
sure.
You know, they might have closed off Mandalay to just be an entrance-only street, and then Haven Street, which is the street that would be coming off near the tanks. If you look, I would get south of the tanks, you see another street where I circled there, and I put, you know, Janet.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to Janet there later. Yeah, we're going to get there later. But right now, those two tanks. Now, two bullet holes in the tanks. Admitted. Apparently, around the bullet holes, and I heard this somewhere on a tape, there is a black, kind of a smudgy area, 360 degrees around the two bullet holes. It looked like they had to, if that black was added, somebody would have had to drop, rappel down on a rope to get there. Those are tall tanks, and put black around the actual bullet hole. Or that was some kind of an incendiary round that hit there and scorched the exterior of the tank around the hole.
Yeah, a trace around would do that.
Right.
Not from, by the way,
not from the hotel.
Floor.
No.
No way. No, because now you're talking, because you're already talking about 1,000 feet from the venue to that floor right there. Okay. But if now you're talking to the tank, and I know it looks like it's really close on the picture. Well, it's not, because you add an extra good 600 to another.
That's at least 500 feet further.
Feet more.
Yeah.
Easy.
Now,
yeah.
Let me, at this point, Gary sent me two stories, and I've also put those under his name. And they are indicative of more and more things coming to light, which are very interesting. It is now pretty much guaranteed, if you look at those two stories, let me name them off for you so you can see. No, those two stories are not there. They must be up higher. Where did James put them? Okay. I'm missing a story here. Darn it. All right. Anyway, the point is the tanks are no longer considered to have been, if you assume that somehow they were shot from the 32nd floor. You remember the two windows were broken out, all right? As you look at the, in your mind's eye, you look at the hotel, the Mandalay Bay Hotel. One window was broken out on the left, and the other window was broken out to the right. The window on the left was broken out in the adjoining room. There was an adjoining door and an extra room on that suite that he apparently bought supposedly for his girlfriend. But that door was open, and that window on the left, as you look at the hotel, was the one that people were saying, yes, that was knocked out so shots could be taken at the fuel tanks. Not true. Both fuel tanks and the venue could be easily accessed from the window broken out on the right in that suite as you look at the picture. That's been proven now. And that is in the other story. The guy's name is, what's his name? Hold on. I'm going to open this up real quick. It says, Indy Investigator. You'll see it's right there. On-scene investigator banned from Mandalay Bay MGM hotels for life after he discovered this. Well, he's the one who figured out that that window on the right, as you look at the Mandalay Bay, could reach both the tanks and the people. They didn't need to break out the second window. So there's a little confusion about that right now. Why were two windows broken out if the other one wasn't needed? So don't know. Don't know. All right. Back to the map. And those go ahead.
Let me explain, Jeff, why they made such an effort to make it sound like he was trying to blow out tanks. Because if, say that they didn't mention it, and someone had found them later on, they could have seen the trajectory, the pattern or trajectory of where the bullets came from.
Sure.
Because if you came from 32nd floor, shoot down with an incendiary round, which would never reach, and even if it did, it wouldn't penetrate. If you do a measure, you see how the bullet went in, right? The round went in.
Sure.
You would have seen that. I guarantee you, if they did the actual forensic work they would do and actually would release the truth, I guarantee you them rounds came from ground level up into the tank instead of up.
Anybody in the parking area, the parking lot could have done it. Pitch black parking lot, easy. So
yeah. And they would have blew the tank, if they would have tried to blow, if it was intentional, they would have tried to do it to cause the distraction. Mm-hmm. See, best thing would have happened, because then you got everyone trying to get out on the east side, trying to get onto that Giles Street,
uh-huh.
which you would have a lot of, you'd have to be, as people, you could use the cars as cover. Now, but say you blew them tanks out, people then start running back towards where the shooters are waiting to do more. Right. I mean, that's the way it works.
Let's set this up again. Now, all of you scroll down to the second photo where there are no labels. You'll find the concert venue. It's right dead center in the picture. You can see the green roof of the stage. So let's set this up again. Look at the Mandalay to your left, fifth or sixth floor. You got shooters. We don't know how many. We got multiple shooters there using different rifles, assault rifle and probably an M60 machine gun, which can shoot from there. They're your primary killers. Then you have at the venue, show us from which direction. Left, again, will be west. The top of the picture is north, bottom of the picture is south, and the right side is east. So where are your teams going to be working in there?
Okay, well, you'd have the northwest corner, which would be, if you look down, there's a, and I didn't label it, on the northwest corner there of that venue, actually, there's an ARCO, an AMPM gas station there. They would have started working, one of the sleep teams would have worked its way northwest towards southeast, so you're looking at that corner there, working down toward the left side of the stage.
They would have gone right in to the left side of the stage in between that and the bleachers and moved in on the left, from the left. Okay.
Exactly. And then you'd have a team west-southwest moving their way. Now, they could either went either way. They could have went southwest toward northeast or southwest and just worked its way over towards the southeast, towards, say, behind the stage.
Right. But shooting was coming in from both sides of the venue. That's what we're trying to get at here, from the ground.
Yeah. Exactly. So so this way, the two teams don't shoot each other. So the big point is they don't want to shoot. They don't want to get hit by their own friendly fire.
What is it that gives them confidence that they're not going to be hit by the primary shooters in the hotel who have been shooting now for 10 minutes?
Well, the primary shooters, you got to understand, are just providing cover and distraction and even maybe taking people out too. But see, you're always in communication because you have earpiece or some type of radio communication. Wouldn't be radio, it'd be more digital satellite type communication.
So you're convinced that the majority of the casualties were inflicted from ground level shooters? Is that what you're saying?
I would say that was the, I would, you know, that's my opinion. I might be wrong.
Right.
Might be off a little bit. I'd say 75% to 80% were done.
All right. Well, you're a military
shooters.
Man. You'd know about these things. These are strategic, tactical moves, and it makes perfect sense. These poor people didn't know where to run. They were absolutely confused.
Let me explain how I also, because if you look at the picture there, I know it's really small. If you blow it up, you can barely see it. But in between the 91 and the ER, you see like a blotch there. It looks kind of, I know it's really blurry, but that's a red and white tent. Now, a lady, like I told you the other day, her name was Gail. She called in the Savage Show. And she gave a detailed description of what happened. That was a tent that her and her husband were taking cover in with the Metro officer. She specifically said that she was, as she was laying down, it looks like to her, they were coming from her west side. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The lady, there was a lady who had been next to her a little bit before she went into the tent that was had her stomach blasted out, which her stomach, by the way, was facing the northwest direction. Because she said her back was to Mandalay Bay. So if you look to where the kind of the area where she said she was in, right exactly before the tent, her back would have been to Mandalay and her stomach would have been in the way the direction it had came in. She said it blew her stomach out, would have been in that pretty much that northwest type corner area. Now, when she ducked down, the girl was killed, obviously. She said she was dead when she hit the ground. So her and her husband took cover in that red and white tent. Now, she said she had heard of multiple shooters and that it was getting closer every time a clip of rounds went off. And it was like sounded like it was from different shooters. So she was saying anywhere, but she never gave a number, but to me, probably she might have been hearing two or three different coming in from the northwest. And she said, as they kept laying, emptying clips, the sound was getting closer, closer, and closer. See, and that's exactly where I came, you know.
Would they have pocketed their clips to keep them from falling on the ground? Because this is a lone gunman. They got to put the clips away somewhere, so they got to pocket them or stick them in a bag or back in their clip belt.
Usually what they do is they take two clips, actually. So you have, a 30-round clip, and you have two clips taped to each other. So
right.
Clip in.
And you just flip it over.
Turn it out, flip it around, boom. And you can, and if you have the gear you can carry up to, you know, sometimes up to 15 of them. So you got 30 clips.
Right. Okay. Round. I want to see, help me with that. I'm looking at the green stage roof. Where's the tent?
Okay. Okay. You see where I don't think, do you have the written, where I marked?
I'm looking. Well, okay. I'm looking at the one with your marking, Route 91 concert venue.
Okay, now look under, in between, underneath the 91.
I see
and
it.
Above the ER.
I see
that
it.
That right there is where she was.
It's straight away from, straight away from,
red and white tent.
Straight away from the venue. So the woman in that tent who was shot had her back to the Mandalay, and she was shot from the northwest corner somewhere.
Sure. Yeah.
Wow.
Right around that type of area. And then her sound was complete, meaning like it wasn't like from a far away round where you have drop and you lose velocity the farther that round travels.
Right.
Her sound was literally blown out, which means that whoever the shooter was, he was very close to the woman. He wasn't far. Within 100 feet.
Maximum velocity of that round had to have hit her in the back. Okay. All right.
And by the way, these shooters would have tried to mix or mix in with the crowd or try to look not out of place. Now, that one video I had seen, and I think you had seen the same thing, where it shows a guy, it looks like some type of police or security uniform.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of security here in town, by the way, their uniforms, some of the casinos do, almost looks identical to a sheriff's uniform. You wouldn't be able to really tell the difference if not to the trained eye.
Okay.
He went in a crouched position, which would make sense because he's not going to be standing up shooting. Crouched position, you have a lot more stability,
right,
a better aim. And you see, because if you're, you know, no matter what, you're shooting rounds off at full auto. Okay, these are automatic weapons. If you're standing up, you have balance issues. See, it's a lot harder to stand than being the reason why you go into a crouch on your knee with one knee, balance your hand on the way he was in that video. It's because you have a good balance, very good aim, and you have a lot more control over that weapon when going on automatic.
Do you think that video was legit?
You know, I can't see why it would be. First of all, it didn't look doctored to me.
Uh-huh.
Now I know a couple of you said, well, you really can't tell if he's shooting or not. I mean, I don't remember the guy's name and his handle on YouTube, but he slowed it down and you could actually see the muzzle blast coming out.
I saw a freeze frame of that.
There.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And that was not a sneeze.
And of course they've scrubbed all them videos off the completely. Yeah,
that's right. Gone. Looking at the picture without labels, look at the green stage roof. And then look straight up the picture to the north, and you'll see the large tent. It's up. It's quite a ways up. No, it's quite a ways up, several hundred feet. It's up there, and it's square. It's slightly off to the, just a little bit off to the right. That's the tent. Okay. All right, we're going to take a break and come back with Gary. We're going to follow the people as they run from the venue, where they went, and a lot of them went to the Tropicana. We're going to follow that, and then we're going to talk about how some of these shooters may have been extracted from this operation. And that's what it was. We'll do that next.